Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
So welcome to a very special Project Love podcast. We have in the hot seat Vicky Pavitt, our very own love coach, who is feeling exceedingly nervous.
I am. Yeah, it's really weird being on the other side of this.
It's funny. I mean, I love being interviewed. I love having questions thrown at me and talking. I could do it all day long. But you feel you're less used to doing that, I suppose.
I prefer to ask the questions, definitely.
Yeah. I think you will enjoy today's interview, though.
But I am looking forward to it. I definitely am looking forward to it. And I was, up until we got the mic out, I was feeling like, yeah, I'm really excited to tell this story. And now I'm like, ooh, okay. I'm just sitting with the nerves. It's fine. It's okay.
It's going to be fine. You will be relaxed within the next couple of minutes, I promise you.
Yeah.
So this is going to be, I mean, such an interesting one to get into because, of course, you are our love coach. And so it's going to be so, I think a lot of people might be wondering, well, what's your relationship like? And what's your whole love life journey been like? Mm-hmm. So we're doing this on just about your 2-year wedding anniversary.
Yep.
Yeah. And about 6 months before you got married, I interviewed your then fiancé, Mark Pavitt, otherwise known as Pav to friends and loved ones. And so ever since then, I've been wanting to get Vicky in the hot seat and hear her version of the story. But I'm also really interested as well to hear about your whole love life journey. Mm-hmm. And also how becoming a love coach has also impacted on your relationship, how you've learned from that. I've got so many questions. I don't really know where to start. And also thank you to everyone who sent in questions on Instagram and over in the Love Zone, our private community for everyone doing the Get Ready for Love course, because those have been really useful and interesting questions as well. So we'll be weaving them in. So where would you like to begin? What would be the bit that will make you feel all happy and full of love?
Let's talk about how we met.
Yeah, let's talk about how you and Pav met. Okay.
Okay, so it was about 10 years ago when I first moved to London. I was living in a flat in Camden with some girlfriends, and one of those friends was Amy Tetty. Yeah. Big shout out, because she introduced us. She actually knew Pav through another friend, and so she invited him to our house for our housewarming party. Yeah. And so I met him in the kitchen of our flat, and I remember thinking he was lovely. I had a boyfriend at the time.
Okay.
I didn't really think anything of it. I just thought he's a lovely guy that I was introduced to. And then over time, I kept bumping into him, different parties, different gatherings. We always had a good chat. I remember we always had a good natter, whenever we saw each other. And then about a year after that, I started working at the same marketing agency as him. So he was my boss for about 6 months when I started working there. And it was there that we got to know each other as friends. So we knew of each other and we'd have a good chat, but it was when we first started working at this agency that we really got to know each other and where the friendship developed. And we used to sit opposite each other. We were on the same team. And so we would chat about different things. We had a lot in common anyway. And so we used to just be giggling and chatting and then sending each other music, like tracks and DJ mixes that we listened to and loved. And then it would get to the point where we'd chat all day. And then like we'd get home and then I'd remember a track that he'd sent me. And then I'd be texting him about that track, like when I got home. So we'd be having this like constant communication throughout the day. And then as our friendship developed, we would spend more and more time together, like hanging out on weekends and in each other's kind of mutual friendship groups. And all this was going on and I didn't obviously know I had feelings for Pav. Like it wasn't like, I just wasn't aware of it at all for ages.
Well, it sounds like a really lovely friendship was developing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like almost like a best friendship.
Yeah, yeah. It was. Mm. I remember like one of the kind of key defining moments, I guess, when I, not that I realised when I had feelings for him, but when I realised how much I enjoyed our friendship was when I got asked to move teams at work. And it was about 6 months into us working together. And I remember coming home from work and feeling really sad that I had to move teams. And it's not a massive deal. It was really disproportionate to what the thing actually was. And I remember talking to my housemates and friends about it and just saying, like, isn't that weird? I feel really sad that I'm moving teams and I'm literally only moving across to the other side of the office. And it's fine, but why am I feeling so sad about it? And
because you're meant to marry him!
So that was going on, and then this friendship was developing, and I remember being round his house one evening with another friend of ours, and we're with two of our male friends, with Pav and another one of our male friends who are both single, and Pav was speaking about his love life, and I never actually really heard him talk about his love life before, and he was saying he actually felt like he was ready to meet someone. And I remember, like, thinking as he was talking, I was just like, God, he's such an amazing person. Like, I really want him to meet someone special. And so I offered to write his dating profile on mysinglefriend.com because that was the one that everyone used back in the day. And it was like end of 2010, beginning of 2011. And so I said, I know, I'll write your profile and I'll be then the guardian of your love life, basically.
So you help be, you, like, oh my that. God.
Because the way that it works is that you then become a moderator on the site.
So you love coached him, basically, in a roundabout way.
I think that was my intention, but I'll tell you the rest of the story to see why that wasn't, it didn't work out like that. So I said, leave it with me and I'm going to go off and write your profile, you know, thinking I'm going to find him someone amazing. And then I found myself really procrastinating about writing it, not knowing why. And then I just decided one day, like, you just need to, like, create some time, like, carve out some time and just write his profile. You said you're going to do it and, you know, stop procrastinating about it. And I remember just sitting down. I'd stayed late from work one evening when everyone had gone home. And I sat down in this empty office for, like, an hour. And I just really thought, okay, I thought about him and who he is and what he could offer a relationship. And I just sat down and wrote this profile. I remember being on the bus home and it was like the penny dropped. I was like, oh, shit. Like,
no.
Yeah, because I realised I'd said in the last line of his profile, he's an amazing person who deserves someone special in his life. And then I realised I want that person to be me.
Oh, my God. But were you in a relationship at the time when you realised this? Or were you coming to the end?
Okay, yeah, I was. It was coming to an end, but I was. And obviously being in quite the conundrum because I didn't want to admit that and also being in a relationship that was coming to an end. So I just tried to ignore it. And I just tried to suppress it and say, it's just a crush. Like, it's just a little crush.
Yeah.
And I knew my relationship separate to this. I knew my relationship, you know, wasn't working and that I needed to end that relationship. I think, you know, actually towards the end of my relationship, because it was coming to an end and I'd been really working away, you know, trying to make it work for a long time, probably much longer than I should have. I think actually I'd already been processing that breakup. Like in that relationship that I think is quite common. So I was honouring how I felt about the feelings that I had around my breakup and just trying to ignore my feelings to him. But over that time, like, we were spending more and more time together and hanging out more and more, like, on weekends. So then I'd see him all week at work and then we'd have all weekends together hanging out.
Oh my God.
And so I think it got to the point where I just realised, like, this is real and I need to listen to what's going on here. And I know it's not the best start to a new relationship coming out of the last relationship, but I just had to let things happen if they're, you know, like, not keep suppressing your feelings, basically. And then there was one night where we were at a party and I'd had a few glasses of wine. And I remember, like, trying to articulate how I felt in a really clumsy way. And I didn't tell him that I liked him or had feelings for him. I just told him how I felt about us moving teams. And I said, I felt really sad when we moved teams. And I feel like we have such a connection and I love our friendship. And he was like, I do think we've got a great connection as well. I think that was the beginning of me really exploring my feelings. Because I thought, okay, he's also feeling, it's not just me. I didn't know when this was all in my head. And he also realised, you know, we had a connection and we had this great friendship. And I didn't know if it was anything more than that still at the time.
Had you kissed by this point?
No.
Oh, right, we haven't even got to the first kiss.
Nothing.
I didn't know if you just rushed past the first kiss.
No, this was all happening amongst
cheeky snogs or anything. Okay,
yeah,
right.
None of that.
I'm leaping ahead, fine.
Yeah, I think it was then that I started to explore my feelings, and we kept hanging out as we were anyway, and I started to realise how quickly my feelings were developing the more we were spending such a huge amount of time together. But I hadn't really, we hadn't really had the chat yet. And then finally, after like, I think it was a few months in of all of this, like just hanging out as friends, really enjoying ourselves, and then thinking, what is this? Like, I don't know what this is. And then I think I decided to pluck up the courage to just say how I felt. But it was in the moment where we were just talking about, I guess we were just talking about what we had. And he was talking about his fears about us progressing and, you know, whether we should really see what this is all about and take a risk. And he was saying, he was voicing his fears, basically all the things that we could lose. And all I was thinking was like all that we could gain. And he was like, you know, quite rightly as well, like he was worried about investing in a relationship that if it didn't work out, then we work together. So then there's that. And then also we're friends. So then we lose the friendship as well.
Yeah. And also, and this is where it's so interesting to hear my real love story with him, because he also talks about this moment where he was resistant. He was resistant because he had had relationships at work which hadn't worked out. And then obviously you're left then working with someone who you used to go out with and now you're not, and that can get all kind of complicated. So he had, what he says in the podcast interview that I did with him was that he'd had this eureka moment of I'm not going to do that anymore. That's it. That's my pattern. I'm going to put a stop to it. And was just like all feeling empowered. And then literally then you turned up and it's like, shit, here we go again.
Yeah.
And so, but he had made a promise to himself that he wouldn't go down that path again. And so it was like, as much as he was resisting it, he was also sort of almost fighting for his, you know, this, he'd given himself his word and he was like, right, I'm going to honour it. And you do sometimes see that happen. People going, I know why it's going wrong. It's because I'm doing this. So I'm not going to do that anymore. And that was to not go out with someone he worked with. And then he was now in the situation again.
Yeah.
He said, I won't do it.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. So you were now at this point where he was going, no, I said I won't do this again.
Yeah. And I think because I knew that he was scared as well. And I just, in the end, I just called it. I just said, look, this is how I feel. I think this is worth the risk. I think we should go for it and just see, because you just never know. But I ended up saying, look, I'm investing energy into something that I think has potential. And like here, like laid my cards out on the table, and this is me, and where are you? Like, where are you at? And I just needed to know there and then, because I think I'd reached the point where I couldn't carry on investing in something that I just, with so much ambiguity and confusion. And I think he respected that as well, that I had said, I'd called that out. And it surprised me, his response, because then with like, in the most simplest and straightforward way, he just said, let's go on a date then.
And oh, wow.
And all his fears that he'd voiced before, suddenly something shifted for him in that moment when I voiced how I felt and declared that I was all in. Something in the moment shifted for him as well. And it was then that he said, let's go on a date. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Let's go on a date. Let's see what this could be.
So this is really interesting. This is when I was doing the interview with Pav that I wanted to come back and explore this with you. Because, and it's great to hear two people in the same relationship describe this, you know, how you got together, because, you know, as always, we're coming from different realities and different perspectives.
Yeah.
The way he tells the story is that he was basically damaged goods and a bit of a dick at the start of your relationship. And I totally bought into that. And I was like, he sounds like exactly the kind of guy. And I know that there are people, because, and I've mentioned a few of the comments on Instagram, other people who are listening to this who were like, tried it with guys like that. And it didn't work out. So at what point are you supposed to keep trying? And at what point do you walk away? But actually, it's interesting because the way you're talking about it, and again, it's your perspective, Pav doesn't come across as a dick. So the way he told his story, he did. The way you're telling the story, you're not. That he's not coming across like that.
Yeah.
And it's sounding like whenever you had the conversations with him, he was actually being very open and honest rather than, or was there a period of time where there was a lot of nothing being said? And do you feel that you were being a little bit led along, but all this ambiguity, and finally you had to say something, or were you quite quick to go in there and call it out and say, okay, we've been doing this, has it been fun for a short amount of time, but if we're going to keep going forward, let's either move forward or just call it a day.
Yeah, I think he wasn't, he was being honest. Whenever he talked about how he felt, he was being totally honest, and he didn't lead me on. I wouldn't say that. I would say he was just going along with it when it needed to move forward. And I think there's something he said about in his podcast about momentum, and how in previous relationships, that's what was missing. He felt like the momentum to keep it moving forward. Yes. And I don't know where he would have been if I hadn't nudged him then, and, you know, a nudge to pick up the momentum.
Well, it's interesting because he says in the interview that that whole momentum, always being in the same place and wanting the same things at the same time, has been a characteristic of your relationship.
Yeah.
So the fact that you spoke up at that point, put those words, you were obviously already in a similar flow together, flow, whether you realise it or not.
Yeah.
And so as soon as you said it, he went, yes.
Yeah.
Let's take that next step. Whereas before, it sounds like you were suppressing your feelings and he was suppressing his feelings. So like meets like, you know, like attracts like. There you were, both trying to unsuccessfully suppress your feelings. And, you know, another part of you guys was kind of just going, the love was obviously already flourishing and starting to grow and, you know, is moving you guys along, whether you liked it or not.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's interesting because, I mean...
Well, you could argue, actually, he was very unavailable at the beginning. I think at the time I was trying to make up my mind whether he was or whether he's just scared.
Yeah.
Because if he'd have carried on with this ambiguity, or if he'd have actually said when I called it, if he'd have said, no, I'm not there yet, I would have said, okay, well, he's unavailable.
Or if he hadn't been clear and said, well, do we have to decide now? Like, can't we just carry on as is? Do you think he would have just carried on?
No.
So Jen said, I remember the interview Selena did with your now husband, and she's saying, my question, I read he's just not that into you in my 20s, and I believe that if a guy wasn't falling over himself to be with you, then he, well, just wasn't that into you. And you should preserve your dignity and move on. It sounds as though your relationship was a bit stop-start for a while. Did you ever think about giving up? And when I was listening to Pav tell his story, because when I did the interview, it was really the first time I'd heard about how you guys got together, I was really struck by, shit, he was being that guy. The guy that I used to get into relationships with, or not get into, but wanted to try to. And I would try and try, and it would never, and it would just... And some of them went on for years like that, like really close friendships that then, you know, got physical, but never, you know, but casual, but never really moved forward. But what you did was you went, right, either we're going to move forward or we're not, which is something that I never did. So I was always like, oh, I know. Just a little bit longer, slowly, slowly. As one of my friends once said to me, you're doing slowly, slowly catch the monkey. Like it was, I don't know what that was. It wasn't a good strategy, by the way. Terrible strategies I tried out in my 20s and 30s. But I think it's so interesting because, you know, how do you know, how do you make that call? How soon should you go? Particularly when you're early days of dating. Obviously, you guys were friends, so it's a bit different.
Yeah.
But, you know, what advice do you give? Usefully being a love coach yourself. But what advice do you give people when in those early days, one or both of you is a bit scared?
Yeah.
How can you tell if they're just emotionally unavailable and they will be for some time, or whether it's just like sticking there for a little bit longer? How do you, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what was unique to us. We were never in that dating space. We were just friends hanging out. So I guess it's a little bit different there. I would say for people, you know, in the dating game, and how do you know? Like, how do you know if someone's unavailable? Well, there are red flags that will be unique to the person. So, like, not wanting to make future plans is one of them. Like, not wanting to think about the future, not wanting to put a second date in. And sometimes it's the topics of conversation as well. Like, if someone's talking about their ex-partner on a date, you know, that could be a sign that maybe they're not quite in the relationship space because they're still in the ex-partner space. Obviously their behavior after you've been on a date with them, like if they ghost you, then that's telltale sign that obviously they're not available. But sometimes, and there's another dating term, called breadcrumbing.
Yes.
Where it's, you know, leading you on, basically. It's like the modern term of leading you on. But that is like being ghosted over and over again. And some women, because maybe optimism or because of an imagination of how you can imagine the future of you.
I'm such a breadcrumb victim.
Yeah, you can imagine, sometimes if you have a wild imagination, you imagine the potential of the two of you. And so...
Oh my God, it's such a curse. God, the fantasizing, the imagination that can see the potential in them, in your relationship, in your future together.
Mm. And so it keeps you going back, keeps you going back and back and back. And it's like, you know, you'll be over them, so they'll ghost you and you're like, fine, like they're obviously not ready for a relationship, they're not worth investing in. But then 6 months later, you find them liking your Facebook posts or tagging you in a meme on Instagram or sending you a message at like 4 a.m. one night, and then you're
flutters.
Like, oh, they're thinking of me.
Oh,
and then
God,
you go back. I think when you're friends first, it's very hard to tell like someone's intentions unless you just keep talking. You have to just keep talking and checking in with each other.
I mean, I think you had that conversation quite relatively early on.
Yeah.
And then he was up for it.
Yeah, I know. And then, it surprised me.
Okay. And so off you went.
Yeah.
And had your McDonald's date.
Yes. So then we, because we'd always been joking about, it's not really a funny joke, actually, to get out loud, but we, it was funny to us. We said, oh, let's go to McDonald's, like, for our first date. And then he hadn't mentioned what we were doing for our first date. He just said, okay, come round to mine at 7 o'clock or whatever, and then pack your bag, because we're going to Sweden for a friend's 30th anyway. Because we'd already planned this, as you know, we had the same friends, so I was already going to this 30th. So was he. So he said, well, why don't we were quite short on time at this point, so he said, well, we've got Sweden coming up next weekend, why don't you come on the Friday night, pack your bag for Sweden, and we'll have our date. I also didn't know if being all in for him, if this was going to be a consistent thing, because he'd said, let's go on a date, and I was like, amazing. But I didn't know it was going to flow from there. I didn't know if it was still going to be stop-start. I was just like, let's just see. So then, yeah, I went round to his house, and he sat me down, and then he came out with this McDonald's bag. And I was like, for God's sake, he's been in there for ages, and he's just gone to get me a McDonald's, so I didn't know what he was doing. And then he's like, when I opened the thing, like all the packaging, I could see it clearly was a homemade attempt, and it was so amazing. It was a really amazing first date. And then we were just like, oh, here we are. It was so nice to then just be honest about how we both felt and that we were actually both excited. Like, let's just see where this goes.
Aww.
It's so cute. I mean,
because I don't think I'd realised how much friendship was there.
Yeah.
Before, and that then turned into the relationship.
Yeah.
But really having that friendship at the foundation. Would you say that friendship, having that friendship at the foundation...
Yeah.
...has continued to be a key part of your relationship?
Yeah. It's funny, I've got this friendship bracelet that he got me for our 2-year anniversary last week.
Aww.
And I just thought that's one of the things I love about our partnership, the friendship that is the foundation which our relationship is built. And it's just one of the things I love the most. I just love... Just love hanging out with him, love chatting with him and talking, and yeah, the way that you support a best friend through ups and downs, and you know, the way you celebrate a best friend, like we have all of that as part of our relationship.
Yeah.
It's like one of the things I love the most, and just what a laugh we have together. We have a lot of fun together, and yeah, he is my best friend.
Aww.
One of them, you know, but he's amazing. What else to say about him? I feel like suddenly really vulnerable.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just thinking, I was about to say, do you see, isn't it wonderful to talk about this stuff?
I feel a lot more relaxed now. And now I'm like getting into it. It's funny because I was watching this video the other day with Brené Brown talking about joy as our most vulnerable emotion. And when we talk about things that are great in our life, how vulnerable you actually feel, more so than when you talk about when life is when it's hard.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. Funny. But, so this brings me to a question that I asked Pav. What do you think made Vicky fall in love with you? So I'm not going to tell you what his answer was, although you have heard the podcast, but it might not be so fresh in your mind. Or do you know the answer? Do you remember what he said?
What he said about me?
Yeah. If you don't remember, that's even better. But if you do remember...
I remember bits of what he said. Yeah.
So what was it that made you fall in love with him, do you think? Like, really fall in love with him?
I think one of the things I first noticed when I met him is how he made me feel. I just felt... He's got such a warmth. His whole spirit and his whole being. He's such a warm person. And I remember I just felt really calm and at ease around him. Like, when I first met him, when I didn't know, I actually felt, you know, more than friendship. And how much I just loved hanging out with him and talking to him and being with him. And then as I got to know him more and just saw what a lover he is, and, like, how he loves the things that he cares about. Like, the how much love he puts into the things that he cares about. He's such a lover of his friends, his passions, our dog. So we when we were in Thailand on holiday, when we got engaged, we came across this stray puppy on the beach. And when we got home, we kept talking about this puppy. We saw this, like, Lonely Planet. I was reading Lonely Planet on the way back. And there was, like, an ad in there going, "Did you fall in love with a dog? Do you want to take him home?"
No!
Like, this ad that spoke to me. And I was like, "Babe," I said at the airport, "Oh, my God, like, that dog." Because we called him Buddy when we were on the beach, because we were, like, his friend on the beach, feeding him and, like, checking in on him, because this poor dog was so, like, malnourished and flea-ridden and struggling a bit. You know, wasn't as... kind of confident as the other dogs.
Aww.
And it was like, we found him cowered behind this boat at night, and he was like, what is that? Is that a dog? We were like, "Oh my God, it's a dog." And all the other dogs were, like, barking and running around, and he was like, freaking out. So we picked him up and took him off to our hut, and then we were just, like, taking care of him. But it was there when I saw this nurturing side of his that I knew was there. I've seen it before, but, like, in such a big way, like, taking care of this animal. And then when we got home, like, we talked about, I think we joked about adopting him. And then when we got home, it was, like, 2 a.m. We were both knackered, like, after a flight, just off the flight from Thailand, you know, exhausted. And the first thing he did in the dark was, like, he got his laptop out and wrote to this dog charity and said, like, "We've seen this stray puppy and how can we adopt him?" And it's, like, the first thing he did when he got home.
Aww.
And I was like, I didn't know that. Like, he was so proactive, basically, at getting this dog, and, like, how much he cared about, you know, saving this puppy, basically.
Yeah.
And then we ended up obviously adopting him, and 4 months later he arrived in London, and then we became dog parents. And that was, you know, like, such an amazing journey to go through, like, co-parenting animal together.
Yeah.
And just seeing how he was just straight on it. Like, it's like he just knew what to do. And I was a bit, like, overwhelmed at the beginning. Like, my God, like, I didn't realise how much of a responsibility this is going to be. And, like, fuck, what have we done? And,
oh, God, I remember that. It hit you when the dog arrived.
Yeah, and he had a similar moment when he was like, "Oh, my God, what have we done?" as well. Like, we had these moments independently of each other. But he was just so good from the beginning at, like, just knowing what to do and how to look after him, what he needs, and, like, Googling things. And I was, like, a little bit slower. Like, he ended up teaching me, like, how to look after him. And I just saw this, like, nurturing side of him that I just, even to this day, like, the other day, I saw him making a bed for Buddy. And he does these, like, so Buddy sleeps on the sofa. And so he does the pillows in a different way and the blanket in a different way. And he always, like, mixes it up. And he's, like, I just watching him, like, make the bed the other day for Buddy. And I was like, "Oh, look at him. Like, he just loves this dog so much, as do I." But just, like, it's beautiful, like, seeing, you know, that side of him.
Aww.
Such a big heart.
Oh, I love it. Well, that is not what he said at all. This is why you fell in love with him.
Yeah. I can actually remember. I remember what he said.
He said it was passion and chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
Of course you did, Pav. That's what you would like it to have been. No, but he said, he didn't say it quite like that. Well, a little bit. But he said, and everyone can listen to the podcast, but he said that you had a chemistry on all levels, and it was just almost like that was... that just kind of almost just yeah, from everything, from the conversations, yeah, to obviously physically.
Yeah.
And one of the things that came out in his podcast was how much he obviously fancies the pants off you, which I love.
I remember
brilliant.
You saying in the podcast.
I was like,
well, it sounds like the woman you're going to be marrying, you still fancy the pants.
You really fancy her. He's like, yeah, I do. How would you say you've helped each other to grow? This is a question that I asked him.
Mm.
So how would you say he's helped you to grow?
I think in the beginning, so I'll go back to, just to set the context of this, in previous relationships, I always felt that something was missing. And not while I was really in them so much, more like afterwards, after a relationship ended, reflecting on why they ended and realizing that something was missing. And I actually realized that what was missing was me.
Wow.
I totally lost myself in all my previous relationships. I didn't do anything for myself. I didn't have my own interests. Yeah, just very preoccupied with the relationship. I didn't actually really know who I was. And it was when I first met him, I realized how much he did. And he really knew himself. And I was really attracted to that.
Oh, wow.
Trait in him. And I felt this security with him that I hadn't felt before. And I've just actually finished a book called Attached, which is the science of adult attachment. And it's really interesting to realize that in previous relationships, I had more of an anxious attachment in the relationship. And now I have a secure attachment, which is so fascinating that I have obviously learned that through him or through myself as well. But it wasn't until I found this, and I always talked about this, like in my earlier journals, like how secure I felt with him. And they say in the book that you can develop a secure attachment by being with someone who also has a secure one.
So he has a natural, but it doesn't sound like in previous relationships he had secure attachment tendencies.
Yeah, and I think we've taught each other, because I think he actually, and I can't speak for him because he doesn't know about this book, and he hasn't, you do a test where you figure out what your attachment style is, and I think before he would probably identify more as an avoidant, someone with an avoidant attachment style, fear of intimacy, whereas mine is like a need for closeness.
Yeah.
Before, like that was my pattern. And it's quite, if that is true, like it's a miracle that we've been able to both come together and both develop a secure attachment with each other.
Well, they do say that avoidant people and people that need for closeness pair up.
Yes, and that's like really common.
I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I also am in one of those relationships. I find that like, why?
Yeah.
Why would that? Why aren't the ones that like closeness together and the ones that like to avoidant be together? But apparently, because that's how we grow, and that's actually what we need for the balance. The yin. And Pav talks about the yin and the yang in your relationship. You know, you bring different things to the table.
Yeah.
And that's the differences that actually are almost the thing that really makes it work, which is such an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah. And it's really, really common for the avoidant and anxious ones to be attracted to each other.
Yeah.
But it's not always the case that that works out. Usually, if you're anxious or avoidant, you usually need someone with a secure attachment to help you to develop your own.
Do you think that maybe because you became friends first, you almost created a secure attachment in friendship?
Yeah.
That then was the foundation to then be able to navigate through Mr. Avoidant and Miss, I need to be close.
Yeah.
But because you had the foundation of the secure attachment, which was based in the friendship, maybe that's why you then were able to develop a secure one in the whole relationship.
Yeah, I think that's definitely key. I've never looked at it like that, but I think that must have been it, because usually that's not a recipe for a happy, healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And avoidant and anxious.
And particularly as obviously in my case, I had a love coach who helped sort out many of my terrible patterns for being attracted to the wrong people. So I can see very clearly the point in my life where things changed, and therefore I then got into a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But with you, you didn't go through any, you know, conscious process of changing up your patterns.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
there's a very obvious difference in this relationship to the ones of the past. And so it is useful to kind of look at, okay, well, what was that thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it is, I think that is exactly it. The friendship gave us that security. And because we knew each other as well, so we could talk about fears probably more easily.
Exactly.
If we'd have just
as
met
friends.
As friends.
Yeah.
And I knew, because I was friends with him, I knew he talked about ex-girlfriends before, and I talked about my relationships before as friends, when we could talk freely and not think one day we're going to be together. And so I knew, probably things in his ex-relationships that he wouldn't have revealed so early on as well. So we kind of understood each other a bit more than if we'd have just met, you know, through a dating app or something. But yeah, it's super interesting learning about that attachment stuff and realizing, and actually one of the things they say when, so some of the studies that were done on children and looking at how the different attachment styles impact childhood, they said how much, you know, if you have your attachment, how much the children then go on to thrive in life. And I feel like that's exactly what happened with me. Before, when I got with Pav, I was in a job that was fun, but it wasn't, you know, going to be my my career. And I didn't love my work. I didn't have self-love as well, really, then. And so I went on this journey of getting to know myself, inspired by him and how he lived his life and how much he knew himself. And all the things, all his passions and things that he invested in as well. I was like, oh, it got me thinking, okay, what are my passions?
Yeah.
What do I care about? And I met you about a year later, I think it was, after I just read a book through Let's Play, which you had recommended through Bexy, I think one of our friends.
Yeah.
That I read because I was feeling really, you know, just like lack of clarity in what I was doing in my work. And it's interesting that I have gone on to thrive in life in that secure relationship. And I wonder, maybe that was the key. You know, it's the beginning of my own journey of growing as an individual. And I think as we've both grown as individuals in different ways, I think in that process, our relationship has grown as well.
Amazing, because I think that's why we're always very careful to say you have to love yourself first before you can love someone else. Mm-hmm. Because actually, my journey of finding love was, and self-love, the self-love was the thing I needed to focus on first before finding love with another.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in your finding love with another, mm-hmm. that then triggered the journey of going into self-love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I think one can often lead to the other,
mm-hmm.
rather than
totally.
One having to come first.
Totally. And I didn't know that as well. I always thought you needed self-love. You needed it first to love someone else. But I think, being in this relationship, it's taught me that both, you can increase your capacity to love with yourself, with others, with the world around you, as you practice love.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's why the practice of love, you know, and it obviously does root itself often in self-love. It can start there, but it does just ripple out everywhere.
Yeah.
So wherever the love starts growing, you could say the same for me, my love of my work then moved on to love of myself and then moved on to love of another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like love can grow in all sorts of your love for your community. And that's where I'm now starting to get into, like, love for my community. But it could have started there and it could have moved into different areas.
Mm.
So it kind of, you know, it takes hold. It catches like a wonderful love weed.
Yeah, as you were moving your arms, I was imagining some amazing magical tree. With all these branches. That's it.
That's better. I prefer the magical tree to the love weed.
Yeah.
The love tree. Yeah.
How it's all interconnected. And what I love about this relationship that I've never experienced before is how much love I have in my life. So love for my work, which I never have before. And I thank you for that. But love with my work in a way that I've never known. Love with friends as well.
Yeah.
Like, that's like been definitely something that's deepened over the past few years, and I've really consciously invested in friendships over the past few years more than ever. Love for my biz wife.
yeah,
and it's all this love, and I don't expect him to be my everything, whereas I had before, like, that was love, like the partner, and now my, you know, definition of love is like a rainbow. You know, there's many different forms, and I love all those loves in my life.
Yeah.
And he's then off the hook, right? So he doesn't need to be my everything.
Yeah,
he's a
exactly.
huge part, but I have so many other loves in my life that I, you know, want to invest in, and they give me joy and, you know, fulfill me.
Okay, well, that actually brings us to some of the questions that came in about how you keep your relationship flourishing and, you know, what your secrets are to a happy and successful relationship. One of them was from Elena, and she said, how do you keep your relationship fresh and willing to grow?
Mm. I'll frame this in the context of love languages, which is a concept.
Oof. Oh, yes.
It's a concept from someone called Gary Chapman, and it was a term that was kind of given to this notion that we all communicate love in different ways. And so there's five love languages that he talks about, and he says usually you have a primary love language and a secondary one, and the rest, you know, they're all amazing, like it's gifts, touch, acts of service, quality time, and words of affirmation, confidence.
Yes. Yeah. We talked about this with Pav, actually, and he knows that that's yours, and he knows he doesn't offer it enough.
I know, exactly. So that's the reason why I'm talking about it in the context of differences.
Mm.
So it's one of the things we have to work at. So my primary love language is quality time, and then the words of affirmation, secondary. Whereas his primary one is acts of service, like little acts of kindness, doing errands, walking the dog, washing up and things like that. And then he loves the quality time as well, but it's secondary for him. And so knowing that that's my language, I that's the way that I give love. You know, I really listen to him when he wants to talk about something, and you know, not always, obviously, you know, you're not perfect, but like I make a conscious intention to be available for him, like if he wants to chat about anything, or you know, making time for a date night and investing in that quality time, or even if it's like just a mini moment of connection at the end of the day, like checking in with each other. And what I have to battle with is the Netflix, Instagram, WhatsApp and all that stuff that gets in the way. And we can both be quite bad at this, but him particularly, you know, loves the Netflix, like loves to get into a series, and so do I, but not quite to the degree that he does. And sometimes I have to compete, you know, with that to get the quality time with him. So I definitely have to drive that. I have to keep driving that. I'm usually the one to do that.
And but I bet he loves it when you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when I, and sometimes he's like, you know, I say, babe, let's switch off the Netflix while we have dinner and check in with each other. And I asked this question, and it's one that I saw on Alexandra Franson's site, where she asks, what was the best thing that happened to you today?
Ooh.
And it's a really good question to ask someone. I remember reading it years ago and remembered it. And so I ask him quite often, I'll ask him at dinner, what was the best thing that happened to you today? And he'll say, sometimes he's really up for it. Other times he's like, I can hear this inner eye roll. Where he's like, oh, I just want to eat my dinner and be on Instagram.
Or like mum's like, how was school today?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sometimes he's like, yeah, let's have that chat. And other times he's like, okay, fine. And then he ends up like forcing something out, like, oh, I guess I really enjoyed my lunch today or whatever. And then I'll say something back, and or I'll say, you know, like, let's do some gratitudes. And again, like sometimes it's met with like, you know, excitement, and other times not. You know, another challenge is the words. So one of the reasons why I loved his love story so much is that I had all this stuff of like, you know, this bank of like compliments of how he really feels.
Because we talked about that in the podcast. I was like, she's going to be playing it to herself at night. So he's like, maybe I could take the best sound bites and just press play a couple of times a day. And I was like, in all honesty, that would probably work.
Yeah, exactly. So I know it's there whenever I need to hear it, because I know he's just not a natural, what's the word for it? He just doesn't say, he's, but I joke with him that he's got an internal compliment bank.
Yeah.
Inside there's all this stuff that he thinks and feels, that, you know, he thinks about me.
Yeah.
But he just never says it out loud.
It's so annoying.
Mm. Yeah.
Why?
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, babe, this, that and the other, and like, you know, voice things quite easily, you know. But understanding those differences really helped me, because it shows it's not because he doesn't care. I just need to look at how he does express his love. So acts of service.
Yes.
One of the things he does, like every morning, he makes me a cup of tea in bed, and he comes and delivers it to me in bed. It's like these small like acts of kindness, and it's him communicating every morning, I love you, I care about you. I have to remember he is communicating love, but he communicates it differently to you, and to just like embrace those differences and not expect him to be the same. He's not the same person as me, and he communicates love differently to me. And he's also an introvert and I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. And it's like embracing that difference in us, the way that we express ourselves and, you know, the way that we resolve conflict. It's very, very different.
Yeah. And we talked about that in the podcast with him.
Yeah.
Because we talked about him needing to have his cave time.
Yeah.
And also as an introvert, he processes stuff by going inwards and thinking about it for a while. Mm-hmm. Whereas extroverts, we process stuff by talking about it. Mm-hmm. So that's, there can be a real frustration mm-hmm. when he's being asked too soon before he's fully processed it to talk about it. And you're sitting there frustrated because until you talk about it, can't fucking process it. So it's just like, why? Yeah. Why have we been given these two completely different ways of processing stuff?
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that?
Well, over the years, we have worked at that. Mm. And we are in a good groove with that now because we've had years of really understanding each other and getting to know each other. Sometimes, you know, learning about each other in a way that's inconvenient. Mm. I guess, because it feels frustrating, you know, at the time. And so I've really learned, actually, in this relationship, I've learned a lot about boundaries. You know, for example, when we've had a disagreement or an argument, we're talking about quite a big topic, like our future, and I'm asking lots of questions and wanting answers, and he can't, you know, he doesn't work like that.
Mm.
And so respecting that he needs time to think about things and agreeing a time when we will talk about them,
mm-hmm.
and which is what you guys talked about as well. We've got really good at that, actually. And, you know, an example being Ibiza. So Project Ibiza is something I've talked about in podcasts before, of having this dream of living and working in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And I know I can't always bring that topic and other topics like that. I can't always bring that up whenever I want to talk about it.
Right.
I have to ask for what I need and signpost that. So I'll say, how about on Sunday when we go for a dog walk, can we, you know, talk about Ibiza? And he'll either say yes or no. Usually yes, because he's got time to process that. Because in the past, when I've just waded in and talked about quite a big topic like that, and he's not ready, he just goes really ambushed. Quiet. And then, yeah, and then it's just, you know, not the right time. And then it ends up with me sulking or feeling disappointed. So I've learned over time that, you know, to get the best out of each other and for this conversation to go well, I'll just let him know that I'd really love to talk about it.
Mm.
Can we talk about it? When's a good time? And he really respects that as well. And we respect each other's space as well. Yeah. You know, we've learned that over the years. You know, it hasn't always been smooth.
Yeah, it's definitely, of course.
Like, we've got into a good groove with that now.
I think we forget about that, don't we, really? It's like, you know, when you're 2 years into a marriage, and how many years have you been together in a relationship?
7.5, nearly 8, I think.
Yeah.
7.5.
I mean, that is a good amount of time.
Yeah.
But it's still relatively in its infancy. Mm-hmm. And actually, he said something, and I wrote it down so I could quote him word for word, because it was so beautifully put. He said, I don't think we've even scratched the surface of the potential of what we can be as a couple. Which was just like jaw drop. Amazing.
Mic drop.
Mic drop. Oh, that was the end of the podcast. Swoon. But I think that, you know, we forget, when you see really happy couples who've been together for, you know, a couple of decades, it's just like they've been working at that and learning lessons and learning how to navigate through, you know, different ways of communicating and different ways of receiving and giving love.
Yeah.
And I just think, it is all about, I mean, I remember Brené Brown, who we now mention in every podcast.
I realised that as well.
She's just like, I'm so obsessed with her. But anyway, she just is a lot of good shit. But she talks about, she references her relationship and she talks about the earlier years. Mm. And she used to have like these rows with her partner, which sounds so similar to ones that I've had with my partner, where you suddenly revert to tantruming, you know, raging children. And you know, she will tell stories of like the you know, her banging on the door, you won't let me in now, you know, kind of going crazy. And then now, you know, years later, how differently they now communicate when those kinds of conflicts come up because of what they've learned by going through the messy stuff. And actually, okay, this is going to be my last question, but this was from the Love Zone from Rachel. I'd love to hear about how you have handled life's ups and downs as a partnership, particularly when you as an individual are so self-aware and committed to self-love, etc. Have you ever felt that you're at very different levels of personal development to each other? And if so, how has that played out? So there's two kind of questions there. How do you handle life's ups and downs as a partnership?
Yeah.
But also, you know, that is an interesting one. When one of you is really into self-development and self-love and personal growth and personal development, you know, sometimes your partner might not be so much into that. And how does that also play out?
So I'll answer the second one first. In the past, I've maybe talked too much about my work. So like the other night, I'm reading that, like, coming to the end of a book on relationships, and, you know, I mentioned something to him, and then I can just tell if he's not up for, especially probably when he's going to sleep, he's not up for having a conversation about that in that moment, then I just have to read the signs that he doesn't want to talk about that.
Well, his head on the pillow, his eyes closed.
Yeah, he's like, night.
What do you think your attachment?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, relationship pattern would be?
I think you were avoided, weren't you? It's just that, not now.
Just got up. Just got out of the shower.
Over time, I've realised, you know, when to keep topics just for friends.
Yeah.
And for my biz-wife.
Yeah.
Of other people, and not, he doesn't need to know everything, you know, about my work, about my day, you know, to keep something separate as well, which I think he appreciates. And also techniques and things that I've learned along the way, like when I came out of my NLP training or EFT training, I have to also understand the boundary of, like, when I can invite him into that world and when it's appropriate and when it's not. And there's been times over the years where it hasn't been, but there has been a few times recently where it has, and he's been really open to that, and we've had a really good conversation about it, and I've actually been able to help him with some of the knowledge or some of the, you know, skills or tools that I know that can actually help. And it's like, oh, that's great that we can do that together now. But it hasn't always been that way. And I think, you know, in the beginning, he was definitely the one that inspired me to go on my own self-development and self-love journey. And then I think he mentioned something to this effect in the podcast that he did. Over time, it's been me that's inspired him as well. So he's gone off on his own self-development journey and his own self-love journey. I don't know if he'd say it in those words, but definitely that's what I see in him. You know, he's gone off on that journey as well. And our journeys are very different. But there's definitely been our own self-development journeys in the relationship that I think has helped the relationship to grow. And stuff he learns as well in, you know, self-development sessions that he has, and, like, things that he learns, he tells me about that sometimes. And I love that because it helps me to understand him on a much deeper level. And then I can maybe share something you know, that relates to that. And so I think it has definitely helped us to grow.
But also recognizing that you don't have to be involving him on that journey every step of the way.
There's definitely been more of a kind of open line of communication where we can check in with each other. And I think because maybe, you know, he does have that space from me, because I've also been learning about boundaries, I think maybe that's why he feels he can, you know, open up more and more with me. There's been a few conversations that we've had, particularly in the last 2 years. And actually on our honeymoon, because of the Designer Life You Love Together kit that you designed for
us. Do you know what's crazy? So that whole idea came from the podcast with Pav. I'd forgotten.
I had realised that as well. So we had talked about doing this, having our honeymoon as a life planning session together where we talk about our future.
Yeah, but you hadn't told me
And
that.
I hadn't remembered that either, that he had said that in the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's why you said, I'm going to give you a gift to do on your honeymoon.
Because I, at the time, when I was developing it for you, we hadn't released the podcast, so you didn't know about it. You didn't know about him telling me. So he and I had to make up this convoluted... Or happened to bump into Celia today, and I mentioned how he wanted to make a honeymoon a life-designing, you know, opportunity. And so she's going to create something for us. Remember, we had to... But yeah, so... He mentions it. He says in the podcast, you know, really going to use our honeymoon as a time to really explore our dreams and talk about our future. And I was like, oh my God. I mean, this is, like, totally my thing. I'm going to create a little present for you.
Yeah.
And now, well, Nothing yet, but this is now an idea that's been cooking up more and more. So watch this space. But yeah, it started there.
And that facilitated some interesting conversations about our future because of the exercises that we were doing individually. And then we had the check-ins with each other where we would talk about some of the exercises we'd done and, you know, really plotting things out and like sharing our vision of what we want our future to be. And since then, we've definitely had those regular check-ins. It's not like in a regimented way, so I don't think that would really work for us as well, like monthly or anything. But we are able to talk about things in a way that we hadn't been before, and we're in a really good flow with that.
Opening up the space more and more,
yeah,
and going deeper and deeper.
Yeah, and we're still there. Like, it's still, you know, work, but it's definitely in flow. It doesn't feel like conscious work anymore as much as it did. We're now in a really good flow, but I know it is still work, but it's more like we're on autopilot with things. Things just work.
We're doing the things you know you need to do to make it work.
Yeah.
Amazing, because I do think those first few years in a relationship, maybe even the first decade, I mean, you're almost there now.
Yeah.
It is. That's where a lot of the sort of early work needs to be done. And if you don't do it, then it, you know, appears in other ways. And, and obviously, you know, life throws curveballs at different stages in a relationship. And then, you know, you have to deal with that. But I think expecting, you know, to get married and happily ever after, it's actually quite the opposite. It's just like, and even the getting engaged bit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the work, you're like, right, shit. So we're doing this for the long haul.
Yeah.
In which case, there are a few things that we need seemingly to discuss and sort out.
There was something that I learned from Alain de Botton when he did this event when he launched his book, The Course of Love. And it was just before we got married. And anyone who's familiar with him and the School of Life know like how anti-romanticism he is.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, the romantics killed love. And this is what love is really about. And just like, you know, the realities of being in a relationship. And there's something that he said that stayed with me. He said, you're going to be the teacher and the student, both of you. So you're going to teach that person how to love you. They're not going to know. They're not going to be a mind reader. Like, that's a lesson I've learned the hard way. He's not a mind reader. You need to ask for what you need. You need to tell him how you feel, and vice versa. And that we, you know, there's no shame in being the student and learning from the other person and from yourself. And also no shame in being the teacher either. In order for a relationship to work, it does require that willingness to be that teacher and to be that student. And it is going to take work, but it's a learning. It's a learning journey.
Yeah. You have to learn how to be in relationship with each individual you're in relationship with.
Yeah.
Because we're all different.
Yeah.
Okay, so final question for you. What are your hopes and dreams for you and Pav over the next 10 years?
Oof. Wow. Okay. I'd love to work on a project with him and to co-create something together. And when we were, when we got married on this, in this amazing finca in Spain, and they ran this eco retreat and, you know, hired this amazing space out for weddings and gatherings and yoga retreats. And I remember on our honeymoon, we talked about how inspired we were by what this couple had created. And it's such an amazing family home that they've created. You know, that's what it was created for. And I just, when I imagine myself in the future on our honeymoon through one of the exercises in our honeymoon pack, I imagined us in a very similar place, just to co-create something that has a positive impact in some way and helps us as individuals to grow.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Watch this space. That, I love that idea of creating a project together.
Yeah.
And it just, what's so beautiful about hearing your story of the two of you is hearing the friendship that is at the foundation and the security that that friendship has given the two of you and how the love has flourished from that basis. So, thank you. So inspiring. There are so many nuances and layers to that whole story and things that I didn't know about and wasn't expecting, actually. So if you haven't heard the podcast with Pav, then head on over there. I think it's quite low down, number 15, I think, in our podcast, a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, actually. But it's really interesting to listen to that side by side with this one. But thank you. How do you feel now?
Oh, I feel great.
There you go.
It was so nice to have a bit of time to reflect back on our, you know, the 7.5 years that we've been together, and to reminisce and just to process it all. I feel like having this conversation today has helped me to really process that story, because you rarely look back, you know, this retrospective, I guess, that we've done. Rarely look back and think about these kind of questions. And so I love doing that. I loved the process of getting ready for this. And I just love talking about it with you as well.
Yeah. Oh, you know, what would be so cool is if every year on your anniversary, you and Pav did a little audio interview about how things are going, how you're feeling about each other. And then, you know, when you're 80 years old, sitting in a rocking chair in your house in Ibiza.
Yeah.
You run, turn us on Netflix. Let's listen to our audio.
Let's listen to our story again.
To our 6-hour audio recordings of the last however many decades.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely taking the time to stop and reflect on your relationship.
Yeah. It was like doing a goodbye hello on the relationship, but for the last 7.5 years.
Oh, there you go. Watch this space. Another Project Love product. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast show. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you're feeling stuck in your love life and finding dating to be frustrating and exhausting, then come and join Get Ready for Love, our 30-day online course to transform your love life. As well as having us, Selena and Vicky, as your co-pilots throughout your journey, bringing you a lesson every day and videos and audio tutorials bursting with energy and love, you'll also be welcomed into our private Facebook group, The Love Zone, where you can hang out with like-minded women and ask for help and guidance whenever you need it. It really is gorgeous in there. Head over to loveprojectlove.com/get-ready-for-love to sign up. And if you'd like to find out more about love coaching with me, Vicky, then head to Coaching and Courses over on loveprojectlove.com.